Good afternoon. My name is Mike Bukach. I'm the head writer and media contact for Cover My Meds. Essentially, I'm in charge of all client and public-facing writings, tech writing, marketing, all that good stuff. So today I'll just go over, I'll do a brief summary of what Cover My Meds is, what we do, and then I'll hand it off to John, who will talk about more of the development and tech stuff. So Cover My Meds, what the heck do we do? Cover My Meds is a website for physicians and pharmacists and their staff to utilize to help streamline the prior authorization process. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with healthcare or the prior authorization process. Perhaps you had family or friends, or you yourself had to get a prior authorization. It is a pain in the ass. You have to, essentially, if you go to the doctor, elevator pitch really quick. If you go to the doctor, they prescribe a medication for you. You have to take that prescription to the pharmacy. Pharmacy will adjudicate the claim, and I'd say 8 or 9 times out of 10, you get the medication. It's just that 2 to 1% where you get a rejection for prior authorization, which means you need a permission slip from either the doctor or the health plan to get the meds. Before Cover My Meds, that process is essentially paper-based. It's archaic. The doctor would, or the pharmacy would then have to contact the doctor or the health plan, say the patient needs the medication. They'll start the PA process, which would fax, calling, staying online on the phones with the health plans for 40 minutes, an hour. Before I started with Cover My Meds, I worked at a specialty pharmacy, and that's what I did all day, every day. It was awful. 8 to 10 hours a day of adjudicating claims and sitting online with the health plans is not fun. The health plan gets the PA. It says, hey, you know, this permission slip, should we allow the patient to have this or not? It has to go through the criteria. Health plan sends it back to the doctor or the pharmacy. The process can take days, weeks, and in some cases, months. So for patients who are on, you know, liver transplant, HIV, oncology patients with cancer, it's a big deal. It's the bane of the healthcare industry. I think the last number is a $300 billion cost annually in the U.S. So it's major. Cover My Meds helps streamline that whole process, and I'll let John get into more technical aspects of that. But we help streamline that entire process by pharmacies and physicians can log in and utilize our site as it's basically the Google for prior authorization forms. So you can go in, find the medication specific to the plan, and submit it electronically. So that's what we do in a nutshell. So I'm going to talk about our culture a little bit. What this PA process has created is two collaborative gears at Cover My Meds, which is sort of unique. It's something I've never really dealt with, but we have the development side and then the operations side. So they have to always be playing nice to each other and collaborating. It has created an interesting opportunity for me as part of my job is to bridge the gap between those two and ultimately make sure everybody's communicating and having fun. So we got our Adventure Time guy up here. So I know some of you are like, well, okay, culture, what the heck does that have to do with me or anything? And, you know, basically at some point in your career, you're gonna have to deal with culture. And it might be a deciding factor in whether or not you join a company, if you leave or stay. Some of you might be interested in startup. You'll have to deal with that. For some of you who are in a negative culture now, I say to you, we're hiring. So talk to us afterwards. When I started at Cover My Meds last year, we had 19 employees. I think when John started, you're like one of the original 10. Employee number 9. Just a number. We had 19 employees, and this year, by the end of the month, I think we'll be up to 73. So we have super growth, which has become a bad and a good problem for us to have. So I'm going to go over some things that we view as that are keys to a stable environment for supergrowth. We got, I think that picture's a little outdated. There's only like 30 of us in there.
Yeah.
So let's see. So this is what we have for our three keys for supergrowth. We take a lot of time and effort in hiring A players. Mostly, it's a very casual hiring process initially. We'll have you in just to see if it's going to be a culture fit. You tour the office, just hang out with us for the day, have lunch, talk to our developers, and this guy, and see if it's a fit. And if it is, we'll have you in for what we call a code day, and you crunch away. And from there, we decide, you know, is this going to be a good fit or not? We do the same thing on the operations. We also have a code day. It's not really code day at all. They don't write code, but very similar. So we concentrate a lot on hiring A players. And yes?
Can you define an A player?
Definition of A player.
Did you look at me for that answer?
What?
Did you look at me for that answer?
Well, how would you say it from a development side? I think.
From a development point of view,
your mic's not on. Yeah, you're off. Don't turn it off.
Okay.
You'll fire me out.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
In that case, an A player from a software developer perspective is not necessarily a world-class software developer. An A player is somebody that we can trust to do their job and in all aspects of their job without having to overwatch them, without having to micromanage them.
Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing we have is to let A players be. Really, and it's the same on the operation side. If you're not necessarily perfect at a job, but you're highly passionate, super smart, we want you to work for us. That's what it comes down to. The second thing that we had is we've maintained a startup feel. We were a startup back in 2008, and we maintain that with our feel of the culture of in our environment at the office. It's very casual. I'll go through some of the pictures, some of the stuff that we have. But there's pool table, there's kegerator, we have our own chef. It's very open. People walk, they actually speak to each other. It's not, you know, you don't email and you just, hey, if there's a problem, I'm gonna walk over and talk to you. And it's open, it's an open book policy. Our co-founder always has his door open. If there's a problem, we walk in and talk to him. And that goes along the lines of number three, which is transparent communication. It's something that we've worked on a lot in creating a successful environment, is letting employees know what we're doing, what the process is like, the relationships that we have that we're building, and just continuing to do that. So there's our A team. I think John would be Mr. T.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. You have a little less bling though. Here's our office. It's very nice. I don't think the foosball table's there, so if that's a deciding factor for anyone, it might be in the back or in the basement. Sorry. It's still there. Yes. no. Say. That's a pool table there. This office was it was architecture firm before we got our hands on it, and I don't know. We're growing so fast. I'm not really sure where we're going to go, but we might just buy the building. I don't know. Yeah. We do really cool like things. Like this, for instance, these are our three ladies that won. We had a mini grant contest. Essentially, everyone in the office submitted a mini grant proposal, and we gave away three $2,000 grants for them to do whatever they wanted. It had to be impactful, legal, and I think that was it.
Yeah.
The first question to us was like, oh, can we, you know, do drug running to Mexico? And I'm like, what? Why would you? No. Seems legit. This is Becky, our chef. She's evil, but she's amazing. She's not evil. She just looks evil in that right picture. She's a triathlete, and she's pretty badass. And with that, we get healthy food, so it's no longer, should we get Chinese or pizza today?
Yeah.
So we get good food, and it's amazing. And we do Cover My Olympics, which is basically us just playing Nintendo and messing around all day and giving rewards for it. That was my favorite logo up there, so I thought you guys would appreciate that. So what else do I have here? Some of you are probably asking, well, has this worked? And the answer to that is yes. And we paid a lot of money for the licenses for this Inc. 5000 thing, so damn it, I'm going to use it at every place possible. But we were 96 and Inc. 5500, whichever, just this past month. We're the 8th fastest growing health company in the U.S. and number 3 in Ohio overall. And we won the Healthcare Heroes Innovator Award from Business First just recently. So it is working, and yeah, I'll hand things over to John. He can go over development with you.
All right.
Thanks. Yeah, let me turn it off. So.
Testing.
Hey, there it goes. Okay, cool. If you'll bear with me for just a moment while I fire up a presentation. Let's go with this. Wrong ones. Doot. This is the fun part of the presentation. There we go. Yeah, do we have like filler music? Can we do that? All right. There we go. At some point we're gonna, oh, okay, let's try this. I swear I know my tools. All right, so let's move it over to this display. And then play the slideshow. Nope. This is like the absolute best thing ever.
Don't you work on computers?
What's a computer? I'm kind of confused. Okay, let's do it this way. Crap. Well, that's me, and that's the next slide, so you can see those, both of those so far. All right, let's just do it this way. Why is it playing on my main display?
I could hold the computer towards
it. Yeah, don't do that. All right. So thank you very, very, very much for bearing with me while I tool around with my laptop like I don't know what I'm doing. Here, let's just switch. Okay. Once again, thank you all for hanging out while I do this. Here we go. Okay, finally. Sorry about that. Your applause is appreciated. Thank you. As we've taken so long to get to, my name's John Kennedy. I'm with CoverMyMeds. I've been with CoverMyMeds for over 7 years, since before CoverMyMeds was its own company, and I'm really bullish on the place. I'm not there because I want to be somewhere else and I just can't be. I love it there. So this is my super low-res title card, and today I'm going to go through the life of a developer at CoverMyMeds. Now, if you're not a software developer, that's okay. We're not going to get too highly technical. This is just kind of a companion to the talk about the culture. This is kind of how it plays out in a practical setting for an actual employee at the company. So let's start first thing in the morning at like 9 a.m. That's when business starts. But if you come in at 9 a.m., most of our employees won't even be in yet because we're very lenient about when people come in. We might have people show up between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. So I'll show up at 9:30, been showing up at 9:30 like for the past 2 months, and I still have to wait on people to get there. So really great environment. I absolutely love that this is a recurring theme you'll see come up a lot. Hiring adults and treating them like adults and not demanding that they be someplace at a certain time, just in general. So absolutely love that. So roughly around 10 a.m., we'll finally be all ready to go. I'll be in my office. For me, that means I'm in an office and I have my pair with me. And we'll get to pairing in a second. I don't want to dive into that just yet. But basically, we'll sit down and we'll kind of start to spin up and say, okay, well, how do we figure out what projects to work on at CoverMyMeds? And a lot of companies, you might have a manager come up to you and say, okay, well, these are the things you have to do. You have to show up at this meeting to plan this thing. And that's not how we work. Basically, we work all online, and I've transitioned to this slide too early. But so we use tools like, for example, an online tool called Campfire, which is just group chat. GitHub, which is really, really awesome. We pay for our own enterprise GitHub instance to host our code and to collaborate. To track issues, things like that. We also have an internal XMPP server that we like to hack on, and you know, obviously I am on. We use Basecamp and Trello, just lots of tools. The whole key here is to just be asynchronous and online. The point of all of that being to keep interruptions to a minimum. This goes for software developers, this goes for support staff, operations people, everybody in the company. The idea is you keep as many things online as you can so that you minimize the amount of time you're actually going in and interrupting somebody while they work. You're certainly welcome to, we're not gonna yell at you, but the idea is to just allow people to work and kind of get out of their hair, to let A players be, man. So there's that, and this is my super technical diagram of our pairing setup. So still like 10 a.m., we're trying to figure out what to do, so we're peeling off Trello cards, we're chatting in Campfire, trying to figure out what the next feature we're gonna write is. And so here you can see the setup that we do for this, and this is a little bit specific to software development. I'll be at the bottom of the screen here, my partner will be at the top of the screen there, and you can see we have, with this awesome technical diagram, two monitors, two sets of input devices, but they're hooked with these extremely straight wires directly into the same PC. So we have the same machine, but controlled by two different sources. And this is really, really, really awesome, guys. If you haven't worked this way, it's amazing. It's great for system administration, for software development, for whatever you might be doing. What it means is if I'm in a text editor working on a project, the other guy who's working with me, who I'm facing the entire day, has to be in the same window. He has to be typing the same thing that I'm typing. If I want to alt-tab over and like browse Hacker News or look up API docs, I can't do that without interrupting his flow, which means we're constantly paired up throughout the day. So from a software developer's perspective, what that means is we're constantly in sync. Instead of having to wait 2 weeks to have somebody look at my code and say, oh, well, you may have done this wrong, I get immediate feedback. And so we don't do it for every employee, and we certainly don't do it for every software developer, but where we can do it, it's amazing. So if you haven't tried it and you are a software developer, totally worth it. So to review, do everything online to avoid interrupting people, and pairing is awesome. So that's that. So now we've set up all morning. We've been, you know, knocking out features, fixing bugs, doing all those fun things. 11:30 rolls around. Now it's time for lunch. Lunch is awesome at CoverMyMeds. We kind of went into it a little bit during Mike's portion of the presentation. But lunch is served by this awesome chick, Becky Nation, who is absolutely a treat to have around the office, and just amazing food. For example, Tuscan chicken, miso glazed salmon. What is that? That was steak day to celebrate a milestone for the company. That was nuclear shrimp curry day. That was nearly inedible. It was way too hot. No, you weren't. It was great, but in a horrible way. So this is the kind of stuff that Becky cooks. She's great for doing things, food allergies, for example, gluten allergies. Maybe you're a vegan. She accommodates whatever we have. So she is just wonderful at that. And basically the way it works for the development team is we all sit around at the same table and eat lunch together. And we try to encourage that for all the teams at CoverMyMeds. So instead of having to go, okay, well, now it's lunchtime. Who's free? Who's not busy? Where are we going to go for lunch? How much are we going to pay? We just get our food, and we all eat at the same table, and so we very rarely break flow. It'll take maybe 30 minutes to get a plate, sit down with everybody else, and eat it. Now, 30 minutes for lunch sounds pretty horrible, unless you put it in context. For example, we might spend 30 minutes eating and then shoot a game of pool on this amazing camera phone photo that I've got of our pool table. We've got the pool table. Not pictured is the company Nintendo and N64. I don't have good pictures of those. They're all just pictures of the backs of people's heads as they're grimacing. But we try to keep the office a fun place. We try to let people relax in the office and not feel like they always have to be on if they're in the office, because that just makes things stressful and that makes people not want to be here. So to review, Becky's awesome. Make lunch a natural part of the day to avoid going out of the flow for lunch. And then keep the office fun. The more fun the office is, the more fun everybody is having. So now we've eaten lunch. My partner and I are still busy doing work, but now it's time to do this horrible process we call software deployment. This is the aspect of getting some software from development to our production servers. And in a lot of healthcare companies, this is a four-letter word. It's like a crazy, horrible process. I've heard stories from places I shouldn't name. reminder to be professional. but larger companies where in order to get software from their developers to their production servers, it involved like doing a sheaf of paperwork for each feature, having three or five guys sign off on the whole process, just so you can get the software to a deployment team who understands the servers well enough to get it to the servers, And then hopefully once you throw the big magic switch, everything works. And this is because they have these ridiculous process documents they have to deal with that outline, here's the things that you have to do because you're dealing with very important data and we don't want any risk. But, you know, obviously enough, that introduces way more risk than the way we're going to show how we do it. Basically, we have a process we like to call make our machines do the hard work so we don't have to. It's a process I like to call automation, which it seems obvious when you think about it. The whole point is, for our projects, we use a tool called Capistrano. It's a tool written in Ruby, which is an awesome programming language. And it knows about our production server layout, and it knows where all of our projects live in Git, and it knows where all of our projects live on the production server, and it knows all of the dependencies for all of our projects, and it knows how to monitor and record a deployment. So we do have a process document. We are a large company, and when you work with large healthcare companies like we do, you have to have written documents that say this is how you do your job. And this is indicative of everything that we do with the company. Instead of pushing that onto the employees and saying, okay, guys, now you guys have to, you know, manually track and write down every time you deploy software. No, we write scripts and have scripts do it. This works for our operations team. This works for our infrastructure team. For example, rather than provisioning servers manually, we use Puppet. Why Puppet? Because it's auditable. We have the script. It builds a server the same way every time. We have Capistrano. It puts the code in the right place every single time. If something should fail, maybe we need to build a binary and our old version of CentOS isn't building the binary right, Capistrano stops the deploy, notifies people that it didn't work, and your application doesn't break in production. It's absolutely the best way to do things. And again, if that's a little bit too technical, the whole point is just to make the machines do the hard work for you so that your employees aren't burdened by having to deal with that stuff. So we've maybe taken that. Oh, it's also a one command thing. I kind of glossed over that, but it's simply, it's a single command that runs this process. There's not like a process where you have to get a team together and do anything. Run a command. And if it fails, it fails, and nothing's wrong. If it works, you're done. So it took much longer to explain how to deploy our software than I could have deployed three different projects to our production servers with no downtime in the time it took me to explain this thing. Amazing, amazing piece of work. So that's the kind of the way our culture falls down in the end. Around maybe 4 p.m. or so, after crushing out a few more bugs, maybe deploying a few more features because we can deploy multiple times per day because it's so easy. We'll review, automate things, keep your job easy, mitigates all your risk. And again, that last part's the important part. Mitigating risk, it's fun to write scripts that do things, but the point is to be able to go back to your large corporations, your CVS, Caremarks, your Navinets, and tell them, no, we had a machine do this and there was no risk and it just happens every single time. That is absolutely the worst picture of our kegerator that I could possibly find. But around 4 p.m., we do like to sit around and have a beer. Drinking is absolutely not required at the company, and the job certainly doesn't make you drink. But rather than leave the office because I want a beer, I'll get a beer and maybe stay a couple more hours and keep working. So I just find it to be fun. Right now, we've got something from Seventh Son on tap, which is a local brewery that's pretty awesome. And that's actually where I'm choosing to end. End on the beer is the way I've learned to present. So once again, I'm John Kennedy for Cover My Meds. I think we've got a little bit of time for Q&A if there are any questions. You guys have been awesome, especially in putting up with the technical difficulties we had earlier. Thank you all very much. Do we have any questions? Yes. The question was, for my Walgreens pharmacy tech, is there anything we can do with Cover My Meds? She actually uses the system at work, and in order to get the job done, she's got to get out of the system she's in and then come into Cover My Meds and sign in and just work in a completely foreign system. And I'm happy to say we have a lot of things in the work that'll get around that. We've already got several integrations with a bunch of different systems. So Walgreens just started using Cover My Meds very, very recently, so we're hoping to get the rest of that integration done as soon as we can. Yes, we are working with other pharmacy chains to integrate. We integrate with their claim system, for instance. We integrate with EHR things at the doctor's office. So we do have that in the works. I really wasn't expecting to get a support call This is awesome. Really. Best question ever.
I was also wondering, one of the things that we take care of for our physicians ourselves to get to the doctor's office to do it. We usually, you know, we fax someone the first time out it's rejected, and then we give them a couple days and it's still not going through the insurance, so we'll fax them again, or we'll give them a call and say what's going on. I know that it keeps us updated if there has been something done with it, but what if there hasn't? Does the system automatically fax them again or try to get a hold of them over a certain period of time?
Unfortunately, right now, no. There's not a lot of way for us to tell if, for example, maybe they are working on it and it's just taking an inordinately long amount of time. And we certainly don't want to start spamming people with faxes. The question was, what do you do if somebody on the other end of our PA system isn't responding? And the answer is, as much as we want to do like automated things to make sure that they keep up, we'll email them. If there's no activity in a while, we'll send out emails. But that's about the extent of the activity we can do there without really alienating people. Oh, real quick, Warner just mentioned, because he works for us too. Wink, you all should. What we call electronic prior authorization, the whole point there is, we mentioned the PA process. It involves a lot of automated faxing between doctors and pharmacies and healthcare plans. And even if you do it all online and automate all the faxing, it's still kind of a pain. One of the things we're doing is electronic prior authorization. So the whole thing just goes online, and there's no way for like the fax to get lost. And So that's rolling out in stages. It's really difficult to move the healthcare industry forward, but we will drag it forward by main force if we have to. Awesome question. Hey there. Oh, that's an actual good question. The question was, what's the percentage of like software developers versus the rest of our employees, like business operations and so forth? We have less than, I think we have just around 10 developers-ish.
In IT, there's just under 30 people, and it's about 25. So the percentage, and this is bad math, but I typically say about 40%.
Warner says about 40% developers. And he's probably right, because when I view the company, I view it as like a bunch of guys sitting around a loft in Grandview, because that's how it was when I started. So I'm constantly confused that we're now this like Inc. 96 company. It's really confusing to me. Any other questions?
So on a code day, when you bring in a developer, what sorts of skills do you like to see? What expertise is really necessary to be successful?
The question was, what do we look for on a code day, on an interview day? I can only speak towards the software development side of things. I understand there's, you know, other departments in the company, but I don't know what they do. They scare me. that's not true, but I'm not familiar with their hiring processes. For the software developers, we'll have you in the morning, roughly 8, 9 a.m. We have a project. We give the same project to every single software developer we hire. I took it 7 years ago. And we essentially give it to you and we say, okay, here's the spec. Write the software. And then at 4 or 5 p.m., we see where you were. We'll pair with you throughout the day. We'll check up. Sometimes we'll sit with you for a while and kind of go back and forth. And then we'll all get beer. And of course, you can have a beer. And you show us what you did. I'm intentionally being vague. I don't necessarily want to, you know, reveal all the secrets. But what we're basically looking for is, as we're pairing with you, we're hoping that you're not a jerk. And then beyond that, we're also hoping that you fit well culturally with our team, because that's nearly just as important as how technically skilled you are. We're also looking for a good deal of technical skill, a gradient depending on whether we're looking for somebody really senior or a more junior level position, all depends. And at least for software development, what decisions are you making? Why are you making those decisions? And can you back them up with something that makes sense? If you're just kind of copying and pasting code around and you don't really know what you're doing, that's fine, but that probably won't land you the job. But if you can articulate why you've made the decisions that you've made, that's also an important part. So very good question.
Yes?
Explain the pairing to me again, because if you have two screens with the same content, do these two paired people have to be working on the same subroutine at the same time?
The question was, explain pairing a little bit. We went over it very slightly with my horrible technical diagram. If if there's two people and they're looking at the same screen and they have the same input devices, or they have different devices on the same machine, do they have to work on the same subroutine at the same time? And the answer is yes. And it sounds crazy. It sounds really weird to have two software developers working on the exact same thing at the exact same time. It makes you feel like you've halved your workforce. That's really not the case at all. So yes, for example, if my pair is working on a certain method, if I want to alt-tab over to the browser to look at like docs, I can't do it. If I want to go to a different file to edit that file instead, I can't do it because it's the same keyboard, right? If I change files, he's suddenly typing in a different file and he's probably mad because I just messed him up. And again, it sounds really weird, but what that means is if he's going to work on this method, I'm working on that method too. So if he starts to go off on a tangent and write code that maybe has a weird edge case in it or a security vulnerability or just plain isn't good code, because we all write bad code every now and then, it means that he's immediately got another pair of eyes on it. I can't like zoom off and do something else. We have to be on the same page at all times. And what we found is it helps us get out quality software way faster, as opposed to I hole up for a week, write a feature, show it to people, half the team slaps me and tells me, no, that's not at all how you do this. You really should be doing this and this and this instead. And now I have to rewrite half of it. Like we take not a week and we get the feature done right the first time. So again, we only recently started doing this. Maybe 6 months ago tops. And before that, I was scared.
It's more for anything called parent programming, if you want to look it up. But it's actually a very well-researched tool. It's far more effective than traditional programming is, but it has a higher upfront cost, apparently, but the development output is so much greater than you get with individual developers working separately that it just cost-wise, is far more
cost-effective.
Kind of, yeah. It is kind of peer review on a character-by-character basis.
The same code, you get this person's going off somewhere and it's changing, or it's not the wrong idea. And so you get the idea of steel sharpening steel. You both get to make each other. You got separate supervisors right there reviewing what you're doing. Oh, you forgot a semicolon there. Well, you don't find that out 2 hours later when you're compiling. You find it out right then.
I like to call it extreme programming.
Yeah, some people call it that. That's a different thing. Oh, no. So, yeah, the technique is called pair programming. It is a real thing, I promise you. We didn't just make it up. But it's super fun.
All right, thanks.
Out of curiosity, are you doing it more as, say, collaborative or more like Golf, where somebody will write a test, the other person will implement it, write a test? So
more collaboratively. We initially tried the kind of Golf method. The question was, do we do like back and forth? So like one guy writes a test and then I'll write the implementation for that test, or do we do more collaborative work? And the answer is always collaboratively. Initially we tried doing back and forth and it worked, but you really did kind of have the development time there. We have the development output because one guy's just waiting around for me to implement what he just wrote. And probably he's off reading Reddit while I'm doing it. But the better answer is it really is collaborative. And again, even saying it out loud, it sounds just dumb, but it's really, really not. For example, I can go on a vacation and there's somebody who knows exactly what I've been doing.
Yeah, I was gonna add in that the doing the paired programming, especially if you swap off domain knowledge, it's spread amongst everybody.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. That's kind of how we spin up new people sometimes. We just give them a pair that's way more senior than they are, and we kind of drag them into the wide world of prior authorizations, which is scary and fun. Yes? The question was, what are the educational backgrounds of our employees, both software developers and more support-oriented people? I'm hoping Mike can speak towards the support folks a little bit.
Is support side, college education, a bachelor's degree, but it varies so much on that side. I'm an English major, and I was wandering around the streets of Columbus looking for work, and I have a pharmacy background, so I'm like, well, what the hell am I going to do? And fortunately, our co-founder's like, hey, we need a writer with pharmacy background. I'm like, oh, yay, me. We have like poets, like with communication, there's a pharmacist over on that side. Communication, hospitality, and Caitlin.
Oh,
She's just a hospitality major. She was lurking at hotels and whatnot, and she's one of our main account managers now. She's one of the originals. There's another one who went to school for dance, and now she's one of our head pharma sales people within 5-6 years. So it varies very much on the operation side. They go through some sort of test. I don't know what it is. I didn't take it, but it sounds scary. It's math and I hate it. So there's some sort of test that they go through. And again, their code day is just that, essentially coming in and seeing if it's culture fit and just visiting the office, having lunch with us and hanging out. So, and then developers.
And then developers. On the developer side, we have like our database administrator doesn't have a college degree. I'm not advocating that we will routinely hire people without college degrees, but it's not a firm requirement. If you can demonstrate ability on par with what we would expect of a hire, then yeah, we can overlook not having a college degree. Most of us do have some type of computer information systems or computer science degrees. One of our analytics guys has a philosophy degree. One of our guys has a master in German language. So, I mean, very, very, very backgrounds. In terms of just what we know. Again, on the development side, we do tend to lean towards the computer sciences, but that's not a requirement by any means. Good question.
I have three more. I'm sorry.
Oh, keep them coming. Our marketing people might disagree that it almost markets itself. Do you have words to this effect?
I do.
Excellent.
I'm a marketing department of one. It depends on the situation, depends on who we're looking. We have three tiers to it. We want to market to physicians. That would be the EHR side. We want to market to pharmacists, so pharmacy vendors, pharmacists themselves, and then to health plans. And drug manufacturers. So we contract with them and that's how we make our money. So it depends. I'll be honest, it's an easy company. I think the company was ready to be marketed. They just needed someone to open the door. And that's what I did. So we just became we're basically like China. You just open the door and let everybody in. Sort of. I don't know if that's so. It's difficult. It's a very specific market. So we have very smart and specific means of getting our name out there. So.
Now I'm retired. This is a nightmare, and doing it this way is just incredible.
We appreciate that. I wish I could take credit for it.
Yes, sir.
I'm a system admin. So, what type of environment do you have there? What type of tools?
The question from a system admin is what tools do we have? You're asking what the hardware background looks like. What our environment looks like. With a caveat that I am an amateur system administrator. They don't pay me to do that because I will break servers. Our layout looks, I mean, it's a healthcare company. So as much as I want to use like cloud providers for things, we can't. Data's got to stay behind our firewall at all times. If Warner wanted to talk a lot, actually, does Warner want to answer this question? Can he do that?
Yeah, sure.
Take the mic.
Thanks, John. So it's largely an open source platform. As John, I'm sure, demonstrated well, we're Ruby, Python, PHP, and with that, a lot of our infrastructure shares that platform. So. It's virtualized, heavily virtualized using VMware, lots of Dell servers, and pretty high density. It's not so much quantity of hardware as much as it is virtualized. And Redis, Apache, Ruby, Passenger, F5 load balancing, and really a lot of the standard tools you'd expect to see in the stack, Bash, Puppet, so forth. Specific questions regarding? Okay, cool.
That's the kind of collaboration we do at Cover My Meds. We just pull people in as we need them, to their dismay. I'm going to hear about that on Monday. Do you mean in terms of like the computers that people are using,
right.
For the most part, the front end of our software is either plugged directly into like an EHR system or something of that nature, or it's all web-based. So long as you have a web browser that isn't completely ancient, we're fine. It'll run on whatever. The majority of the people in our office use Macs. Our support staff uses Windows. We have some oddballs that use Linux, and we'll support pretty much whatever our clients need us to support. But thank goodness web browsers have come a long way, and it's really, really easy to do that. So I hope that answered the question.
Yes, sir.
I might have missed this at the beginning, but what's your health insurance?
what health insurance do we provide? What do we have?
SuperMed.
Do I have to pull out my card?
Can I tell them that?
Sure.
I guess.
We don't pay premiums. So it's all, you don't have to pay anything until you have to go in, but I believe we have SuperMed. SuperMed PPO with Medco is a PBM?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm on my wife's health insurance, so I can't probably answer this question.
I tend to run into that.
Yeah.
For family too, that's pretty notable. It's not just
very much so.
Thanks, Warner.
Any other questions? All right, cool. Well, if that's all we've got, then thank you very much all for your time.
Thank you,
everyone.